And I got ready to use it the other day.
The stain was for on August 7th, 1996, interviewing Brenda Berkman. So Brenda, since last we spoke, you've been acting lieutenant, you've been promoted. And do you want to speak a bit about the changes in your job description and your life as a firefighter?
Okay, well, I'm not acting. I'm actually
right.
Promoted.
You are no. You've been serving as
a lieutenant.
Promoted, but you hadn't.
Probably I was just in school or mm-hmm. something. They send us to school for a month and we spend almost no time talking about management, which is mm-hmm. what we spend. 90% of our day doing, and then we spend about 10% actually engaged in emergency operations. It's been very interesting, a little unnerving at first, because in typical fire department fashion, sent to an area of the city to supervise in that I had never worked in as a firefighter, so I didn't know the buildings or anything. And so, of course, my first day as a lieutenant, I am in Engine 1, and my first phone alarm as an officer was to the Empire State Building. So, you know, you look up and it's like, oh, God, what do you do? But it turned out it was nothing. It was just a defective alarm system. But still, it's a very different area of the city. We have everything. This is sort of Midtown, Chelsea, West Village. Mm-hmm. And I work in Ladder 12, which is in with Engine 3 and Battalion 7. So it was a whole new set of guys who had never worked with a woman in their firehouse before. There might have been a few women detailed in there from time to time, but no woman had ever been assigned there. And they first got used to me by having me bounce through there, which meant I was working there about one third of my time, half of that time in the truck and half of the time in the engine. I worked in two other firehouses as well. And so I did that for a year. So they sort of got to know me a little bit. Still, the captain was not particularly happy to have me come there. He had a different person in mind, a guy. I ended up with the assignment, and subsequently, since we've become mutual partners, you know, he has to deal with me on a regular basis, mm-hmm. and I would say that, you know, he's gotten over most of his initial trepidation about mm-hmm. having me there. And I think, for the most part, the guys have also, it's still a big deal that they have, you know, one of the only two women lieutenants, and they have Berkman, you know, who is the chief shitster. And then, there just aren't that many women around. Mm-hmm. So the idea that they have any woman, is sort of like, geez. I would say that in general, we struggle through, mm-hmm. you know, it's, and I enjoy it. I like having a lot more control over my day. Of course, I'm still subject to people above me making demands on my time mm-hmm. and stuff, but basically, you know, I schedule my own work, of which there's quite a lot. The pay is certainly not commensurate with the responsibility and extra work that you have to do. No really sort of downtime, I find, certainly not on the day tours. Mm-hmm. We're constantly going in and out, and very busy. And, I have to be a jack of all trades. Not only do I have to know what I should be telling the guys under me to do, but also I have to, I'm responsible for their well-being, so everybody has to get back to the firehouse safely. You know, if anything goes wrong, I'm being held ultimately responsible. It can be a scary feeling sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
What's a typical day like?
I'll typically be there an hour before the tour starts. And I check to see who's working that tour, and if I'm working 24 hours, who's working the next tour, and make sure that I've got somebody to drive the rig, you know, a chauffeur actually coming in, see if there's any details in or out of the house, you know, people having to leave to work in other firehouses that day or being detailed in to work in my firehouse to fill an empty spot. I look through the department orders. I look through the what we call our pass-along book, that's sort of like a handwritten history of what's gone on since the last tour that I worked, you know, that all the officers add to when something happens to the rig or, you know, one of the members or some kind of difficulty or issue in the house that should be noted. I look at the incoming papers. I see if there's any reports that have to be done that day. I have to fill out the staffing, the manpower, you know, for the proper tour. I have to do the time reporting to make sure that people get credit for working or not working, whether they're on vacation or whatever, that we have, you know, they don't get their check if they don't have a TPR form that's sent in. And that typically occurs, you know, within the first hour. Mm-hmm. And then a change of tours, you know, there's a tone that comes over. Everybody assembles on, in my firehouse, everybody assembles on the apparatus floor. I talk to the members that are working. I give them their assignments for the day in terms of emergency operations, you know, what position they have, chauffeur or irons or can, or, you know, there's five positions in the truck. I make sure that they inspect the tools that they're supposed to inspect, that everything on the rig is working. If it's not, I have to call the shops. And that's just, you know, within the first hour and a half or so. Then we may have, after that, we may have a drill. We may have a, we may have to go out on building inspection. We may have complaints that we have to investigate. We have to take care of, the guys will be doing the committee work, which means, you know, cleaning up the firehouse and stuff, while I'll be doing the paperwork. Mm-hmm. They'll have to go out and get, you know, we'll go out together and get the meal if we're responsible for that. You know, I make phone calls, take care of whatever needs to be done during the tour, and hopefully not leave anything over for the next guy to have to worry about that's coming in after me, because you get a reputation as being sort of a slack, a slug, you know.
What do you like about it? What's improved?
It's very challenging, mm-hmm. Because of the constant demands. I don't worry just about myself and my own little job responsibilities anymore. I have to think about how we're all performing as a team. And one of the things I like about it is the training aspect. I like teaching, and I'm very conscientious about drilling. Mm-hmm. And fortunately for me, you know, my company seems, and the firehouse in general, seems to be interested in drilling for the most part, so, you know, I don't have to ask twice to get people involved, and they're fairly enthusiastic and about contributing and stuff. So that's a good thing. I like being able to drill on what I want to drill on. I try and figure out, you know, what it is about the people that are working that day, what areas they may be interested in or may need work on to bring their skills, you know, improve their skills. And because we have very young guys, mm-hmm. under me. For instance, last night I had, of the five guys that I had working for me, three of them had a combined total of less than 6 years on the job. So that's a little unnerving when you start thinking about, you know, that these people, if something happens, are these people really going to be able to know enough to keep themselves out of trouble, and keep me out of danger, and, you know, and do what we have to do for the civilians that we're helping out, so.
Now, in terms of your working relationship with the captain, How has that proceeded? I mean, what do you bring to that to improve the relationship with his acceptance of you?
Well, I think a lot of it just had to do with reputation versus reality. You know, the saying in the fire department being telephone, telegraph, telefirefighter, and you know, there's this very speedy and often inaccurate network of rumors that get spread about people, not just about me, but you know, definitely about me, and then there's just a certain reluctance on the part of a lot of guys to work with women because they entered this job feeling that, you know, it's going to be a man's world and why should I have to work otherwise? And I think that the main thing that has improved our relationship is just a general getting to know one another. And he realized that, you know, a lot of the rumors about me were not accurate and that I am a hard worker and that I'm conscientious and I'm trying to do the best that I can. And that I'm not looking to, you know, cause problems in the firehouse or, and I don't have a thin skin, mm-hmm. you know, and I have a good sense of humor. So, you know, these things sort of, like, I think, allayed a lot of the initial concerns he had about me coming there.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about you switched unions when you took this position?
You know, that has been, like, such a disappointment in a lot of ways because, on the one hand, I had heard, and I think it's accurate, that the officers' union, the meetings are much more under control, there's a lot less cursing and, you know, general mayhem that goes on and stuff. And that's true. But the downside of the officers' union is that our benefits, I think, are shit. Our dental plan is compared with the, you know, things actually got worse for me in terms of benefits. And, you know, so that in terms of the kind of salary increase that I've gotten over the beginning of my promotion, we get our biggest salary increase after we've been promoted for 3 years. And I've only been promoted for 2 in October. You know, the salary increase is not made up for the loss of overtime and also the increase in medical and dental expenses that I've had, considering the amount of extra work and responsibility that you have.
Why is their contract so far behind the firefighters?
I think just because they're smaller. Uh-huh. You know, yeah. And the city can get away with giving them the shaft easier than they can with the firefighters. I mean, generally the officers piggyback on the firefighters' contract, but that doesn't mean that we get everything that they get. And I'm not really sure, but I suspect that our benefits are also somewhat tied to the superior officer benefits and the PD, and it wouldn't surprise, and they have like so many little cabals over in the PD of various you know, the Lieutenants Association and the every rank has like a separate association. The other thing that I think that happens a lot with the UFOA is that the even though the lieutenants and captains are the greatest proportion of the membership, they don't have the greatest benefits, and it's sort of like the U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. You know, the small states wield power way out of proportion to their numbers, and that's definitely the case in our union. That the chiefs, you know, hold take a lot more of the bigger slice of the cake than they would otherwise be entitled to.
Have you seen any difference in terms of the way this union responds to women and firefighters?
Not really, no. Brower had been, who was the president of the union, had been very nasty to me on occasions where women had come up against his membership, namely the officers. And most notably for me, in the medical office deal because the doctors are part of the UFOA. And had gotten personally very ugly on, you know, in the media about the situation and stuff. And it's like that never happened, as far as he's concerned. I was a little disappointed, you know, and that's been okay. You know, I'm willing to let bygones be bygones. I was a little disappointed that when I got the White House fellowship that the union did nothing to congratulate me. I mean, after all, it was the department put it on the department order, which was a first. I've been getting total strangers have been calling me up and congratulating me about it, you know. But my own union hasn't said boo, even though this is the first time in the history of the 32-year history of the program that any firefighter has ever gotten it. You'd think they'd have like a little pride in the fact that one of their members got it, but it doesn't seem to be the case. So that, you know, that was like a little shocking, actually. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if the same thing would have happened if a guy got it. So
probably not.
Well, you know, I don't know. You know, it's hard to say because sometimes the unions are just so incredibly out of it that they, you know, they're more interested in what the next firefighter calendar is going to look like or something, you know.
Right. What do you have to say about Von Essen taking a new position with management? Is that...
It was a little shocking in the sense that, you know, here the head of the union now just walks crosses a line and now he's management, you know. I don't think it's bad for the firefighters. I mean, the first thing that happened was that Giuliani is incredibly pro-FD. Mm-hmm. And so that works in our favor unless we do something to piss him off like we did with Koch. I don't see that changing. And I just wonder if Tommy is willing to stand up to him. He says he is and that, you know, he doesn't he can walk if there comes a crisis in a situation. Tommy was one of the more progressive of the union leaders of the UFA as long as I've known him.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Von Essen.
Tom Von Essen. And so, you know, I have hopes there. I was waiting to see what he was going to do. I expected him to have a learning period where he really wouldn't take any like drastic steps to do anything until he sort of felt like he was a little more secure in his actions. And now that he should be at that point, I'm leaving to go to Washington. So, yeah, I don't know what he's going to come up with, but, you know... I'm shocked in the firehouse about how much negativity there was towards his there's a lot of suspicion about his motives, and you know, why is this union guy all of a sudden management, and you know, what did he have to sell out to get there, you know. Mm-hmm. Was the whole thing with the merger with EMS a deal done so that he could become commissioner or something like that? So there's that suspicion, you know. There's not really a lot of joy about it, seeing one of their own become the most powerful person in the fire department. It's very, I think, tunnel vision on the part of a lot of the UFA members, but. You know, we'll see who turns out to be right on that.
Now, how did this? How did you decide to apply for the White House Fellowship, and what were your thoughts? Were you feeling you needed?
Well, I'd never heard of this before, mm-hmm. but when Safer was commissioner, it seemed like all of a sudden there started to be a lot more advertisement of promotional and, you know, career enhancement opportunities, scholarships and various programs that were available through the city and elsewhere, you know, and these things started appearing on the department order. So I'm reading through the department order and it says something about a White House fellowship. And I just said very simply something like, fellows spend a year working in Washington. If you're interested, contact the fire department, Department of Personnel. So I did that, and I asked them to send me the material, and they sent me this huge Xerox packet. And I looked at it, and it said, deadline, it was like 1 week. And I'm talking about, this was a very involved thing. They wanted to know, what was your class rank in high school? It's been a long time since I graduated mm-hmm. high school. You had to have, list all your employment since you were 3 years old. You had to get references and job recommendations mm-hmm. and all this stuff. And for some, I just sort of like decided, well, let me give this a shot. I put aside everything for a week. And I got it organized, and when it came, and fortunately I had some very good friends who agreed to write these things on very short notice for me, and it was a lot of writing on my part, lots and lots of writing. You had to do a proposal to the president and a whole bunch of stuff, and, you know, involved thought. So I get ready to get the fire department recommendation. I call over to the Department of Personnel over there, and nobody knows anything about the only person who knew about was the director who was on vacation. So I said, when's she getting back? She's getting back like a day before it's due. I said, well, forget it. So I call up, and I just arranged to get my own recommendation. So she calls me back like the day before it's due and says, you know, I'm calling you back about it. I said, well, I took care of it, you know, whatever, on the mail. And then she says, oh, no, it has to go through the Department of Personnel, the City Department of Personnel. And I said, why? And she said, because they were the one who made the opportunity available. I said, this application process, I found out later, was on the Internet. You know, anyone can apply. You don't have to have... I said, you know, they don't particularly care for me over at the Department of Personnel because I'm constantly suing them. And I have like one day. I said, I can't bring that thing up. Well, you know, you do what you want to do, she says to me. So I did. I sent it in. And next thing I know, I get called for the regional interviews, which was very intimidating, except that I knew one of the panelists already, who was Ray Kelly, the former police commissioner. So that was kind of nice. Oh, hi, how are you? You know, type of deal. And I got through that. And then I get called for the Nationals, and we had to go down to Annapolis and get interviewed down there. And the next thing I know, they picked us. So it was quite...
So there's only 18?
There's 18 of us, yeah. And, you know, it's a big honor. People have gotten it. Have been like Colin Powell and Henry Cisneros, HUD secretary, mm-hmm. and... Doris Kearns Goodwin, the Nobel Pulitzer Prize winning author. I guess she did the Johnson biography.
And Eleanor Franklin.
Yeah. And on and on and on. I mean, when I looked at the directory of former fellows the other day, they're typically all like CEOs, head of whatever they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little intimidating from that. Or they're in jail. No.
So you're going to be working in the Department of Labor?
Right.
And what kinds of things? Do you have any idea what you'll be doing there?
Well, I went over for my, you know, 1 hour interview, and it was one of these combination, I asked them questions, they asked me questions, and I told them that what I was interested in doing was working on interagency projects. In other words, if there are things that cut across the different agencies, mm-hmm. that's the kind of stuff I'd be wanting to do. And who would I be working under? And they told me that I'd be working under the direct supervision of the assistant secretary, who is Cynthia Metzler, the number two person in the Labor Department. And then subsequently, Reich found out I was coming, and apparently the Labor Department is pretty interested now. They had really read my resume quite carefully, and apart from the... ubiquitous question, which I got on all my interviews, like, you were a lawyer, what made you decide to become a firefighter? That was like the thing, that was the common thread throughout all the interviews, a natural question. And so, and that was a question I got, you know, all through my interviews for the fellowship. They were just fascinated by this idea of a white-collar, highly paid worker, you know, taking a humongo pay cut to do this very dangerous blue-collar, physically demanding, anti-woman type of job. So they had not only asked that question, but they'd asked, like, lots of very specific questions about my resume and about my policy proposal and my previous contacts with the Department of Labor, which were rather limited to the Women's Bureau, and that was about it. But I had been a speaker at their anniversary conference for the Women's Bureau and things along those lines. So, you know, it was a good interview, and I think they're interested because it seems like a good fit for them. They weren't interested in any of the other fellows because I just don't think any of the other fellows had a driving desire to go there either. Mm-hmm. So, but for me, it's I think a really good opportunity. See the big picture.
Mm-hmm. So you have a leave of absence from the fire department,
right?
So,
mm-hmm. And we don't know what those conditions are yet because they haven't informed me. Okay. You know.
Now, what about in terms of the organizing with women firefighters? Any new developments in terms of the national or local organization?
Well, basically, I'm just not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I am the secretary of the local organization. I've been doing the newsletter very sporadically, but. Mm-hmm. You know, that's going to have to be picked up by somebody else. It's a little depressing what's going on with the local organization. There's a real lack of interest in from everyone in terms of showing up for meetings or getting involved at all. Or, you know, if somebody has a problem, if they have an issue, well, then they want the organization to instantly respond. But if the organization is just going to consist of the president, mm-hmm. you know, calling up whoever to say, you know, we need to have this done or whatever, well, eventually even that person's going to get tired of the thing.
Who's the president now?
It's Rocky Jones, the other lieutenant. Yeah.
How is she doing in her job now in terms of being a lieutenant?
I think she has a more difficult firehouse to deal with than I do, but that was her choice. I mean, she picked that place, and I don't know if I would have, but you know, everybody's got different ideas about what kind of house they, you know, every house has a different personality, and people have different things that they want to do, and so she had worked there, and she knew what was going on there, and she picked it, and she seems to be coping with it. So I think both of us have ended up, you know, being satisfactory from different perspectives. You know, there haven't been like any huge blow-ups or huge problems or anything along those lines. We're just sort of going along, just doing our little lieutenant's thing and hopefully just acting the same way, you know, having the same issues as the junior lieutenants who happen to be men.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what about the national organization?
National organization, I don't hear exactly what's going on with the board.
Are you still a trustee?
No, I'm not a trustee anymore. Mm-hmm. And I just finished doing some work for them. I did the update on the legal sections of the handbook, which we had published, I don't know how many years ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago now, and I just finished doing my part of the legal stuff, with, you know, which was good from the sense that I had to update my own, my own knowledge of what's going on in the law in that area, but bad from the sense that, you know, pays about 50 cents an hour when you really break it down, So, you know, it's getting your name hopefully on the masthead, though, isn't really, but it's a good thing to do, and the national organization has some interesting projects going on. They're doing some stuff with value enhanced recruit training, where they're doing a little pilot project to try and encourage departments to revise the way that they hire and train their newest firefighters. So, you know, that's interesting, but I'm not all involved in that. And, you know, there's a few other things going on that are good. We have another national conference coming up in June. April of 97, and I basically had to bow out of any organizing responsibility for that because of the
But
fellowship.
You'll attend.
I'm hoping I'll be able to.
Where will it be?
It's going to be in Austin, Texas. Mm. So, pretty yeehaw.
Barbecue.
Yeah, we're hoping to get Ann Richards as a keynote speaker. At least I am. I don't, you know, I don't know what's actually been done to accomplish that or not.
In terms of, we had spoken before about the captain's exam, and any ideas
I'm
about...
I'm totally screwed on that, I think, because they've actually set a date for something like November of 97, and I won't even get back to the department till September, so it's going to be really hard to study, and I'm not totally writing it off. I'll take it, of course, but I just think that I'm going to be way behind the eight ball, and all I can hope for is that they'll postpone the damn thing 6 months or so, you know? Yeah. It's a little depressing. One of the other lieutenants in my firehouse has very kindly offered to send me some study materials while I'm down there.
So in terms of aspirations now, where are you at in terms of your career?
Well, in terms of New York City, I don't know. You know, I would like to get promoted to captain. I don't know how realistic that is. Let's say that I have 4 or 5 more years left before I hit 20. I'm starting to think about, ways of enhancing my resume and broadening my horizons that would be good in terms of trying to get a position of real authority either here or somewhere else rather than just, you know, firehouse authority. I mean, I enjoy the fire scene. I enjoy the emergency work. I certainly enjoy working with the different personalities on a, you know, intimate basis. Although sometimes they drive you crazy, but in terms of I'm starting to think, people have sort of said to me, well, you know, you should be fire commissioner someday. And then the idea that Tommy Von Essen was a firefighter, I'm hoping to use the fellowship year to sort of explore those possibilities. I already started by going into a master's of fire protection management program at John Jay, and I've got a semester of that out of the way. Now that I'm going to suspend that, too long gone, but that's only a 2-year program. So I come back, I finish that up in a year and a half. I was thinking about rejoining some committees or doing some stuff nationally. And, doing things that aren't so strictly tied to women in the fire service, but show a greater depth, aren't too one-dimensional in terms of issues. So
it sounds like you're moving towards your second career.
Yeah, I think I think that there's, you know, assuming I want one, because there's, I have a lot of years of working life left, and I'm hoping I'm sort of like the Bob Reich role model. You know, here I am changing careers every certain number of years. The fire department is the longest time that I've held a regular job during my adult life. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I have to sort of aim low. I think I could easily get a job like teaching in a degree program or something like that. I don't think that I have to settle for something that's that low level. So we'll see.
Good enough.
We'll see if other people agree with me on that.
Okay. I told you about the 300-pound woman question. But
is that your question, or that's
no? That's the question everybody wants to ask firefighters, if they ever have to carry. But what's the hardest thing?
You don't carry
thing?
Anybody out of a fire, because this is the whole thing with the famous quote from Mayor Koch about, I don't care what gender the firefighter is, as long as he or she can carry I forget what Koch's weight was at the time, but something like 230-pound mayor out of a burning building. Nobody carries anybody. Everybody drags. Mm-hmm. And frankly, there have been instances where the strongest guy on the department literally was not able to single-handedly get a person out. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, you're going to have to call for help and maybe make a start, you know, get them partway down the hall or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you may not be able to get them entirely out by yourself. You're dragging people, and there's various ways of doing that. We find that because women tend to have more strength in their lower body, they're using their legs and lower body to generate the power to drag somebody, rather than, you know, pull them along with their arms as much. But managed to get them out. My advice would be, don't weigh 300 pounds.
Good advice. Yeah. Okay. Well, what was the biggest shortcoming of the training that you had to become a lieutenant?
Well, the overall shortcoming I think affected everybody was that there was very little time spent on real-life management issues and even real-life firefighting scenarios. And the great majority of time was spent adhering to federal and state training mandates and things like hazardous materials and, you know, some other stuff that we really don't do that much of. But because of these mandates, you know, we have to have 15 hours or whatever, before we're certified to be blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And actually, every firefighter is supposed to get 15 hours of hazmat training every year. So those kinds of things eat away at your 4 weeks and also at your just sort of interest. So the one thing they tried to do was to give us a little that we spent like a week or something like that on something called, it has to do with instructional methodology. Oh, it's called EdMed, Educational Methodology. And it's to try and teach you how to drill. Mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of it really sinks in. And depending on where you go, some people just never make an effort, mm-hmm. you know, to drill. But we spent some time doing that, and everybody enjoys that, but then it's a question. There's no follow-up. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no kind of, well, how are you guys doing after mm-hmm. a year out there? And, you know, it would be great if you could bring people back for like 3 days and say to them, what did we not teach you that you needed to know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, how can we help you out now? And what have you had problems with? Mm-hmm. And what have you not had problems with? And things along those lines. But they don't do any of that. For me personally, the training really fell down on anything relating to diversity. Mm-hmm. I'm in there with around 30 of us, 29 white men, mm-hmm. generally from very similar backgrounds, very similar attitudes towards their job. You know, we're here to fight fires, you know, fairly similar experiences in terms of, you know, not having been in fire prevention or not have, you know, there were a couple of guys who had been marshals, but, or had been in rescue, had a little bit more unusual career paths, but the great majority of us were all in this one little monolith. And in terms of, you know, trying to encourage people to work with other people whose backgrounds were different than their own, there wasn't a lot of that. They had some goofy thing on women in the fire service, which used these horrible examples, like of a woman failing to do X. I can't remember what it was, failing to like save a coworker or something like that. And as if it were a real life thing that had happened. Mm-hmm. Wasn't just like a fictional incident, mm-hmm. but like it was a real incident. And I objected to this being used as a discussion point And I was told, well, you know, if you object to this, well, you should write something down. And, you know, and then immediately, you know, the guys are looking at you like, what are you raising a stink about here? They didn't see the point,
right.
You know. So it turned out Rocky, who had been ahead of me, had had a couple of things along those lines where she felt like women were really being singled out as being deficient and problematic and problem causers and, you know, this kind of thing. There was never any kind of attitude on the part of the instructors that perhaps people's employment outcomes should be tied to how well they are able to work with people who are not exactly like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That in some way people who commit, you know, sexual harassment or racial discrimination or something should have their careers affected by it. And they don't, there's nothing along those lines. The department has never really put its money where its mouth is in terms of its commitment to EEO. And certainly you saw that in officer training. Now keep in mind, this is the only officer training that people get, except for when you're promoted to the captain, they give you one day on how to be an acting battalion chief. And that's it in terms of management training. So, you know,
There
will be conferences. The deputies will go to deputy conferences. There will be the captains are actually the newly promoted captains. They have this very interesting program now called the Captain's Development Program, where they take the guys out of the firehouse for a full year, and they assign them to desk jobs, which everybody hates, and they give them jobs that are like in all different areas of the fire department, finance and you know, staffing and operations and, you know, and special projects and things where they have to go and they have to research and they have to write and they have to deal with civilians, the civilian side of the fire department and, you know, all kinds of things to broaden their horizons. These guys are bitching and moaning about this like crazy. And and then they have speakers come in. So it's like a little fellowship program for them, really. And I thought this was great, you know, and to really bring people out of that lockstep mentality, and they're like, and now I really question what the department's commitment is to it. Initially, they had a guy who was organizing it, sort of de facto. He sort of got it dumped into his lap, and he was very gung ho about it. He believed in it, and now it seems like it's sort of faltering. You know, like maybe after Safer left, there's not as much of a commitment to it at the top. Or maybe they think it's more of a waste of time than they initially thought it was going to be, or maybe they can't find the money for it. I don't know what the deal is, but it seems to be like. So I was hoping by the time I get promoted that, you know, there would be something like that still. And I don't know that's going to be there.
Any word on Susan Blake?
Susan's up and doing her little thing at 58 Engine, whatever she does up there. I don't know. Yeah, she's doing her job as far as I know. And we just got a brand new woman firefighter who's in the academy right now, Anna Schimmerhorn.
She's
a nice New York name. No, she is not. And Anna's pretty tuned in to, you know, the real deal. She's not like some little naive babe in the woods like we were when we came in. She knows what the fire department's about. And she's the only woman in the class, Natch. I have no idea where she's going to be assigned. I talked to her a little bit about that this week and, you know, was asking her about, well, you know, what are you looking for? But she doesn't even know if she may be bouncing around. That's another thing they're doing. They're taking firefighters and the brand new ones and supposedly sending them to a different house every year for three years now that they may can that too. So in any event, Anna worked very hard to get on the job, and you know, has ridden with fire companies, has buffed. She knows what's what's going on. So she just wants to get through training academy and not, you know, not make any waves, blend in, and not be high profile, which is not a dumb thing on her part. You don't want to be high profile when you're in training academy. So get the hell out of there.
Alive.
Yeah, in one piece. Hopefully, you know, not too many scars. And.
Okay, well, any other comments before you go off to Washington?
I wish I had started doing this earlier. I wish I had started doing this, like, at the very beginning of my career. Because, you know, a lot of things happen. I even wish I had the time to, like, do things now, because things happen in the course of a tour that are just unbelievable.
Keeping a journal.
And I don't have time for any of that. Right. I mean, and they're hysterical, too. There are many of these stories that are just unbelievably funny, and now when I try and think back on what are they, you know, what the hell, I don't know. We did have, right before, I think one of the things that, made things maybe a little easier on me when I first went to 12 Truck was right before I got formally assigned there, we made a grab, we saved a guy. And it was one of these sort of fluke things, as they all are, where we weren't supposed to be the first due truck, but we ended up first due and went to the fire floor, and first due engine was there, and they said, we think there's somebody in there. We thought we heard somebody behind the door, but, you know, we can't get in there. So we popped the door, and, you know, it was, there was a guy. And we got him out, threw him out in the hallway. And the next engine, the engine that I'm actually with, took the guy and did some work on him, brought him back. He was out. And they brought him back, and he spent about a month, I think, in the burn center because he had respiratory burns and facial burns and stuff. And we went in, you know, did the rest of our deal. I was certain that there were other people in there, but it turned out there weren't. And it worked out very well. You know, we made a grab, and it was a very good feeling. Guy completely, like, disappeared. We never heard from the guy. And the chief wouldn't put us in for any kind of a citation or anything, which was sort of weird. But we did get the council member, who was a personal friend of mine, to have a little ceremony and give us all a big proclamation that thanked us for saving this guy's life in his district and blah, blah, blah. So that was, you know, that was nice. I set that up because I was trying to give the guy some recognition when the chief had clearly given us a shaft, and I think they appreciated it. So that sort of, like, smoothed the way for me to come in. You know, oh, here, look, we made a grab while she was the officer, Nita. Yeah. You know, she didn't stand in the hallway, you know. I can tell you, God. No, the girls are very, get scared. So that was kind of cool. I don't know. I mean, there have been just a million funny stories of, you know, water fights and things that seem incredibly juvenile. Mm-hmm. You go and you see things all the time that are just beyond the pale, you know, that you never see as a civilian. Mm-hmm. You're in people's apartments in the middle of the night and, you know, come on, dead bodies, and it is, it's never a dull moment.
Well, that'll be for the book, your book.
We'll have to do a fictional account.
Thanks for participating, good luck.
Thanks.